Welcome to Under Lock and Key, news and commentary about prisons from the Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League and the Maoist Internationalist Movement.
Despite the drop in crime, prisons continue to expand, Mumia Abu-Jamal discusses the death penalty, and a prisoner describes the new prison torture techniques.
The U.S. incarcerates a greater percentage of its population than any other country, sending more black men to prison than college. The purpose of this program is to educate about and inspire activism against the American lockdown.
New U.S. government statistics show that the incarceration continues to skyrocket despite officially declining crime rates. The American prison system is part of imperialism's ever-growing system of oppression and social control. MIM recognizes all imprisonment under imperialism as political. It is the oppressed that are locked up after being railroaded within the settler nation's bourgeois injustice system. Imperialism and its allies commit the most horrendous crimes. These crimes go unpunished because it is the bourgeoisie that creates the laws and controls the courts. Bourgeois accounting of crime does not include multinational corporations murdering peasants to build golf courses. Bourgeois accounting of crime does not include devastating malnutrition, preventable disease, and environmental contamination resulting from imperialist wars. Their bourgeois accounting of crime is extremely suspect because crime itself is politically defined according to what class and national interests are represented within the government. No surprise that America excludes imperialist crimes from the official crime rates, but typically, white nation pigs and bureaucrats have used official crime rates to justify the proliferation of pig departments and prisons. Recent reports prove what MIM has said repeatedly. Increased imprisonment and repression is primarily a tool of America's attempts to maintain control, not of increased official crime rates. Despite the continued decline in official crime rates, the U.S. prison population grew 4.8% in 1998. The government estimates that at the end of 98, there were 1.8 million people in jail or prison. The total rate of imprisonment was also up since 1990, from 461 to 672 per 100,000 residents. There were fewer officially defined crimes committed in 98 than there were for the year before, but the prison numbers kept growing up. Authors of the U.S. report attribute this to several factors. First, even though crime is down, there was a 4% increase in people sent to prison and jail. There was also a 39% increase in the number of people on parole returned to prison. The rate of release continues to fall, and the average time spent in prison before release continues to rise. Finally, expected time served by those now entering prison has increased to 43 months, from 38 months in 1990. Changes in the U.S. injustice system's policies have made it so that the prison population will continue to grow, even if crime rates fall. People are still going in faster than they are coming out. America will imprison more people for lesser crimes and will keep them in prison longer. The prison system has its own momentum, for it's only partially related to crime itself. The injustice system serves political, economic purposes, national oppression, population control, and the exploitation of labor, jobs for the labor aristocracy, and contracts for corporate America. A downturn in the crime rate cannot stand in the way of these important goals. The new statistics offer fresh evidence of national oppression in the injustice system. In 1998, the states with the highest imprisonment rates were those with the relatively largest pockets of oppressed nation members: Louisiana, followed by Texas, Oklahoma, Mississippi, and South Carolina. The states with the lowest imprisonment rates were the whitest: Minnesota, Maine, and North Dakota. The difference in incarceration rates between those states is not small. Louisiana's incarceration rate was more than 5 times that of Minnesota, Maine, and North Dakota. The latest year for which imprisonment of oppressed nation members was calculated is 1997. Imprisonment of black nation members has been rising faster than imprisonment of whites throughout the 1990s. With black and Latino incarceration rising over 60% during the 1990s, the percentage of prisoners who are white has fallen below the 50% mark. Most striking were the imprisonment rates by age as well as sex and nationality. Among 25 to 29-year-old black men, the imprisonment rate was 8,630 per 100,000. That's a black incarceration rate 10 times the rate for white men of the same age group. In percentage terms, 8.6% of black men between the ages of 25 and 29 were in prison in 1997. The concentration of prisoners in the prime ages of the 20s and 30s has calculated devastating economic, social, and political effects on the black nation. Families, neighborhoods, and communities have major leaders and contributors ripped from their hearts and brutally imprisoned for years at a time. When and if they are released, the terms of their imprisonment are designed to prevent their success in mainstream pursuits. For whites, men in their 20s and 30s are getting the education and job experience they will use to translate into positions of power, wealth, and savings in building their families. MIM does not diminish the importance of black women when we say that the loss of all these black men and the damage done to the survivors takes a horrific toll on the black nation as a whole. The prison system is indeed booming out of control. It's vital for the people to understand the machinations of this system if they are to develop their opposition to it. The imprisonment of millions of people in this country is not the result of crime or the attempts of the imperialists to make this country safer, except for themselves and their lackeys. But in building their machine of oppression, they are also laying the groundwork for a resistance movement, for the development of anti-imperialist and revolutionary consciousness on the part of prisoners, former prisoners, and their supporters on the outside. The oppressiveness of the prison system is a symbol to all that care to see it, a symbol of the wanton inhumanity and hypocrisy of the imperialist system and its supporters. We need to develop the consciousness that the prison system inadvertently promotes to undermine and eventually overthrow the system from within as well as from without. This is an essay by Mamiya Abu-Jamal entitled An Impartial Killing. With Mamiya's access to the media limited, this essay is read by the Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League. See for yourself why the United Snakes wants to silence revolutionary leader Mamiya Abu-Jamal.
An Impartial Killing by Mamiya Abu-Jamal. The hungry judges soon the sentence sign, and wretches hang that jurymen may dine. Alexander Pope, The Rape of the Lock. The dog days of August 1982 drew several people to the pools in Chicago's Washington Park, strangers who would meet and thereafter be linked for life. Among them, Marilyn Green and Jerry Hillard, who would be shot to death after being robbed. Also, Henry Williams and William Taylor, two men who would give incriminating statements and testify against a man named Anthony Porter, who would be arrested based on these statements and on the testimony of a cop named Anthony Leonce, who swore Porter was the man he stopped, frisked, and released at the crime scene shortly after the killings, as the man was unarmed. Porter would be tried by a jury with at least one member who attended church with the mother of a victim. She told her fellows in the panel that deliberations weren't necessary. As far as she was concerned, they could vote guilty right then. This jury would convict of 2 counts of murder, 2 counts of armed robbery, and unlawful restraint against witness Henry Williams, and 2 counts of unlawful weapons use. Porter would be sentenced to 30 years for the robbery and unlawful restraint charges, and to death. He filed appeals to every court that he could, and was rejected by every one. When Porter complained of the juror, the Illinois Supreme Court found such a relationship was not prejudicial, and mere suspicion of bias or prejudice was not sufficient to reverse the verdict. The court majority neatly affirmed Porter's conviction and sentences thusly. The clerk of this court is directed to enter an order setting Wednesday, May 21st, 1986, on which the sentence of death entered in the Circuit Court of Cook County is to be carried out. After several stays, Porter came within 2 days of death when the court granted a stay to examine his mental competency occasioned by his low IQ. But the issue wasn't his competence, but his innocence, which was determined not by his defense lawyers, not by the state or federal judiciary, certainly not by the prosecutors, but by several young people, students of Northwestern University's journalism class. They solved the case in 4 months. After almost 17 years on death row, Porter walked away from the executioner after another man explained on tape how he killed the two swimmers in a drug deal gone sour. Late last December, one of the witnesses, Taylor, told Northwestern University students that the cops threatened, harassed, and intimidated him into testifying, and reiterated his original statement to cops on the crime scene that he didn't see Porter kill anyone. Ah, what of the actual killer? The cops interviewed him the day after the killings and tried to get him and his wife, who witnessed, to give testimony against the guy they had already fingered, Anthony Porter. Alstery Simon sat and listened as they tried to convince him Porter killed two people that he killed, and looked at mugshots of their key suspect, and promptly fled the state. Porter's appeal, opposed by the then state's attorney, now Chicago Mayor Richard Daley, was little more than an empty formality. Had the DA, state's attorney, County Judge R.L. Sklavowski, Illinois Supreme Court, or Chicago police had their way, Porter would have been dead today, years before his innocence was proven. But Anthony Porter, like most on death row, was poor. And that is the quality of legal representation he got. Poor. That factor, joined with police passion to convince witnesses they had the right guy, and the blind ambition of prosecutors and judges to use Porter like a political stepping stone, all but ensured his condemnation to death row and his remaining there. He got exactly the same kind of fair trial that hundreds get every day and will get tomorrow, and the same appeal. The system doesn't work. It wasn't designed to. It was designed to look like it does. It sucked almost 17 years of life from an innocent man whose alibi was treated like the cruel, cold, heartless joke of a constitution. That is, glanced at, spoken of, and ultimately ignored. By Mumia Abu-Jamal.
This has been Under Lock and Key, a revolutionary anti-imperialist league and Maoist internationalist movement program about prisons. For more information, contact RAIL, P.O. Box 712, Amherst, Massachusetts, 01004, or email radio@mim.org.